I think I dialed the right number anyway, if this is the toilet radio thing. Five Finger Death Punch, leave him be. I have a mood, he's been through rehab. I love the champagne thing. I think, honestly, he's right. People have been thinking they know him well, and they don't know him at all. And going through rehab and getting back on the road and being the front man of the band has basically been an epic return. I think also the album shows a new start, and everybody's got to be patient with that. But however, when Jeremy Spencer was going through rehab, nobody picked on him as much as they're picking on Ivan. So let Ivan do his thing and let him vent, and it'll just get better from here. I know it will. I don't think it's ever been a point where it's been god-awful, but he is pretty strong in nature. And Five Finger Death Punch has gone through an extraordinary amount of change in the few years that they have been together. And since we're talking about rehab, drugs, and trying to stay sober, I think Ivan's choice of coming back as he did and focusing on his career is probably one of the smartest things he could do. As far as the people, the haters, if you don't like the station, change it. If you really are truly a fan of Five Finger Death Punch, you will just hang in there and let him reciprocate the recovery and get his life back on track. And things will get better if he knows he has supporters than haters out there. Thanks.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
Greetings, friends. It's your boy Joe Thrash and Kill. Welcome back to another exciting episode of The Toilet of Hell Radio, a show where we, we're supposed to talk about metal, but in reality we just talk about dick jokes and confused leftism. Anyway, thanks for joining us. If you want more episodes, go to Patreon. We've got more of them there. If you like this kind of thing for some reason, get more episodes. Also, you can rate and review us on iTunes. That helps in some way. I'm positive. And if you really want to be a mensch, tell your buddy, hey, listen to Toilet Radio. It's a good a show. Do the Italian fingertip thing. That'll really sell it. We're without our good buddy 365 Days of Horror. Press F to pay respects for him. But instead, we're joined by my good buddy Brennicide. Brenna, how you doing, man?
Good, man. Been kind of a wacky week for me, just on the side of like work and life and everything. So just as like a sort of hypothesis I had, I was like, what if I just cut out social media as much as possible to see how it made me feel? So I didn't delete my accounts or anything. I think that's kind of extreme because you can just close a browser window and stop it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I uninstalled like the three major apps from my phone, you know, like Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I just took them off my phone. And if I want to check that shit, I have to be home on a computer. But I'm not like, you know, crazy in a chair, just looking over and over and over again at these three things. And it's like, you know, it's honestly helped my mood a lot. And I mean, like, I'll go through my phone and I'll look at this stuff and it's not there. And I'm just like, oh, well, I don't want to go to my phone browser and do all that crap. So I just put it back down and I'm like forcing myself to now have to like interact with real people in real life.
Man, that's brilliant. I used to read books. Now I read dumb asses on the internet. So
right. Same. Yeah, I just picked up a Norwegian Wood. I'm gonna read that shit. I mean, I've literally just picked it up. I went three pages in. I was like, there's no video in here. So I had to, you know, move on. But I'll get back to it, I'm sure.
I think that's actually a pretty brilliant idea. When I'll get to work, like I'll sit down, I'll pull out my coffee and my sparkling water. And the first thing I do is check my email. And the second thing I do is check Twitter, where I immediately just throw myself into a vortex of giant depression by like clicking on whatever first story I see about like how everyone's definitely going to die because of climate change. And right. I'm just like, okay, well, let's set the mood for the entire day where I'm just not motivated to do a fucking thing.
Yeah, Twitter is not a good place to feel better. Never. No. I don't think I've ever gotten good news from Twitter. And if I did, there's always bad news right behind it.
Well, I think that's a good idea. Maybe our listeners ought to give that a try as well. Just remember, subscribe to our shit on iTunes or wherever, so you don't have to go to Twitter or Facebook to see we're posting new episodes. You can get them automatically downloaded to your phone. Anyway.
Right on, man.
Back to the news of metal. You know, the most basic element of metal, I would say, is probably the music made by instruments.
Something like that.
Am I wrong here?
You shouldn't be. I think that's pretty much the consensus, is that you have to play it to make it.
Right, right.
Or make it to play it, I guess I could say.
One of those. Readers, if I'm wrong, send me an email, toiletofhell@gmail.com. Correct me. Let me know what, in fact, is the basic element of metal. And we'll address that at a later time. But related to this news, related to this bit of information, I was reading the news that I found via my social media feeds that make me miserable. And have you seen this? Have you heard about this? It seems that Guitar Center is in a little bit of trouble.
Oh, yeah. Anybody with any knowledge about Guitar Center as a business, they've been in trouble for a long time, several years at least. But it just gets worse. Like, there's always something else going on there.
Yeah. We're going to spend a lot of time on this episode talking about we're going to talk about Guitar Center. We're going to talk about buying guitars. We're going to talk about people in metal and their obscene gear stashes. And we're going to talk about what exactly is going on behind the scenes to destroy Guitar Center. So just to give everybody a heads up, what you can expect with the next, 50 minutes of your life or so. Long story short, Guitar Center is facing imminent bankruptcy. Moody's, the credit rating conglomerate cartel thing that is completely unaccountable to anybody, they recently downgraded Guitar Center's rating from like CAC++ colon happy face. Now, sadly, down to CCC-, which I'm pretty sure is like the worst one.
Yeah, so, it's like a brownie face now.
Yeah, yeah. They got they didn't get a star sticker on their test. They got a C me after class. So technically, they're still solvent at the moment as we're recording this, but that probably will change extremely soon. Which is a bummer, man. I don't know about you, but one of the highlights of my younger years was convincing a parent to take me into the big city so I could go dick around with all the shit at Guitar Center.
Hell yeah.
That is my favorite thing to do.
Well, we only just had one open up in our area, like just recently. The closest one was like an hour drive. And so my buddies and I, we would make several years ago, we would make like a point to just be like, hey man, it's Saturday. We all got nothing to do. Let's get in the car. Let's drive, 60 miles to Guitar Center. And that was always such a blast until they open up the new one. Because, say what you want about Guitar Center. Yeah, they have Fenders and Gibsons and Line Sixes and that's it on the new front. But they have so much rad used shit because they kind of take everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it's really cool to go in there and see like what's just randomly been brought in from around the area. And just, I don't know, because you can't find it all online. They don't put everything up there quite yet. So we always got a kick out of just like checking out all sorts of weird, wild shit that was just hanging around in there.
I've mentioned it on the show before. I'm from an extremely small town, kind of not near anything. So the nearest Guitar Center was, an hour plus away. Also like where the nearest anything was. So that was like a big to do, man. There was no store anywhere near me like selling guitars. There was no place I could go in and dick around with somebody's guitar or play with the pedals or play the opening riff to Enter the Sandman on an amp way too loud.
Yeah.
Kid in a candy store experience for me.
Hell yeah.
I live in a big city now, and there's a Guitar Center nearby me. And you know what? I still go pretty often. I still like the experience of going there. The only bad thing to me is checking out, in which I normally go in to buy strings, picks, you know, things of the such. And it requires signing an affidavit and giving my social security number to actually, you know, complete the process.
Would you like a 2-year protection plan on your guitar strings? It's good for up to 2 years.
You know, considering I change guitar strings like every 2 weeks, maybe I should do that. Yeah. Oh, right. These strings got all cut off. Yeah. Better give me some more.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing is I've been in that position where you try to sell the little extras and you know that's like something that they have a stern talking to at the end of the month when they don't sell enough of their stupid plans. So
you've worked retail, right?
Oh, yes, I have. And I've worked sales too.
Yeah.
I've been through it.
It's a thing, man. I worked at GameStop for a while.
You definitely know. Yeah, everybody knows like the story of GameStop. Everybody had a friend who worked at GameStop. Like the shit you have to put up with from management.
And for $7 an hour, if that. I can't even remember what minimum wage was when I was doing that shit.
Man.
It was bad. The worst was that, of course, the people. During the summer, parents would drop their fucking kids off at our store and just leave for work for the day. Which I understand, man. Things are tough all over. You know, you don't have childcare, you don't have a budget for that because, you know, nobody has any money. But please don't pawn your kids off on a 16-year-old that's just trying to make $7 an hour at Guitar Center.
Yeah. But yeah, Guitar Center not doing so well. I don't really know the ins and outs of it. I just know that they're like very much in debt and they're really not making a profit anymore.
Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things to this. There's a lot going on here, as it were. So you mentioned the used gear selection at Guitar Center. Do you buy the used gear at Guitar Center? Is that the normal thing that you purchase there?
If I was to get guitars and amplifiers pretty much exclusively, yeah, that's mostly what I do for the Guitar Center. I don't see the point in buying new anything when it comes to music gear. I mean, obviously, you know, strings, picks, pedals even is okay. Cause they're just like little boxes for $100 or so. But like, there's so much shit out there. There's so many perfectly good working guitars out there. So many perfectly good working amps, just, you know, not being used anymore. I don't see the point in like going to purchase a brand new out of box, really anything. So
I'm with you there. I haven't purchased new musical equipment. I think since, either high school or college. But when I did, I bought it at Guitar Center. And since then, you know, I've learned, I don't want or need new gear. And there is so much, you know, think about it. Like how long have, manufacturers been putting out mass produced, instruments and amplifiers and pedals for the consumer market in the United States? What is it? 60 years?
There's, probably more than that.
Yeah. Just thinking about the explosion of rock and guitar based music and how much shit is catered exactly for rock and metal musicians. Mm-hmm. So I live in Austin, which is very much a musician's town, which means that if you're trolling Craigslist, you got something you got your eye on. You wait until a couple of days before the first of the month, and you've got every musician in town like, oh shit, gotta make rent. Time to let go some guitars and amps and pedals and stuff. So it's very much a buyer's market.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And we kind of, I mean, we've got lots of artsy people around here too. If you really want to drive to Boston, you can get some more stuff because there's all sorts of music schools up there and shit like that. But I think the last new thing I bought was that Boss Katana I've mentioned. But I haven't, just because there was no used ones and I wanted it so bad. But it was only a couple hundred bucks, you know. It wasn't like a big multi-$1,000 tube amp or something.
Yeah, and that's a brand new piece of technology. I mean, these kind of modeling amps are fairly new, so there's not like a huge cache of used supply for them. Just in general, I'm a person that likes to buy everything used, except for, you know, things that you can't buy used, like food.
You can get used food for free. You just got to dig for it.
Yeah, yeah.
Certain receptacles outside.
I'm trying to be more eco-friendly, but freegan, I think, is a bridge too far for me at this moment.
Oh, no?
Yeah. I can see the appeal.
Can you?
Waste not, want not.
I guess, right?
You ever look at your bank statement at the end of the month, look at how much money you spent on food? Come on, man.
But I love eating. It's my thing. I love it more than anything. So it's like, I just figure that's just the expense of every day for me. I just eat so much shit. But we spend so much money on groceries, even though we try to penny pinch and, you know, make sure we get only the necessities. And it's a bummer. And I mean, honestly, yeah, I get it what they say. Like, if you go to certain dumpsters behind grocery stores, they'll throw out like meat products and stuff and all sorts of food that's just kind of barely over the sell-by date, but it's still perfectly good food. It's the actual fact that they're going in a food dumpster to get it is just, ugh, it's like makes me wretch just thinking about.
Yeah. I've started volunteering at the food bank here in town and like seeing all the stuff that's just perfectly fine being donated to the food bank is a little bit heartening, at least to see that this isn't rotting somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's a giant like industrial operation.
And it's funny too. There's a lot of guys who go dumpster diving in like Gibson dumpsters or just like guitar manufacturers dumpsters, and they find stuff that's like pretty playable. It just requires like a little bit of repair and stuff, but it's just not like exactly to spec. So they had to throw it out.
If I had to go digging in a manufacturer's dumpster to find something, it would not be Gibson. No. Trash going into the trash is just extra trash.
Right. Just too much trash on trash. Not to mention that they just put up most of their trash for sale anyway.
Yeah, that's a fair point. We ought to discuss it that like Gibson is also facing imminent destruction.
Very. Yeah.
But I feel like Gibson really deserved it, whereas Guitar Center might not have.
Right. No, Guitar Center, I don't think as much. Guitar Center didn't really make all the just piles of mistakes Gibson has made. Gibson has just been so set in their ways, and they've made these guitars that have just been so hideous every time they tried to make something new and innovative. Like they just keep getting hit with all sorts of lawsuits and all sorts. Like just the other day, I'm talking like 3 or 4 days ago, the company that made the RoboTuners, and I don't know if you guys remember, but it was like standard on new Gibson models that they had these awful robotic tuners that would just automatically like go to E standard if you strum them or something. This was a huge controversy like a couple years ago. But I guess anyway, long story short, that company is suing them for $50 million in the state that Gibson is in right now. I'm assuming because Gibson didn't make good on some sort of business promise with them. So Gibson's not doing so well.
Yeah, we had a guest writer, the devil, write about Gibson acquiring Cakewalk Software, offering users like a lifetime license for a couple hundred dollars, like they'll get all updates in the future, and then immediately discontinuing the product. So they're probably going to deal with a class action lawsuit from owners of Cakewalk as well. Like you knowingly sold us nothing.
Not to mention, there's so many used Gibsons on the market, like we talked about. If you want a Gibson, you can go to Craigslist and get one. You don't have to like order one for $4,000 from Gibson itself. You can get it from some guy.
Expensive. Why are they so expensive?
I don't know.
That I've heard is that I think the mid '90s is kind of the mark where like quality just took a dump, but if you get something from the mid-90s or before, you're in a good spot. I've also heard, bafflingly enough, that Epiphone, their sub-brand, has higher quality standards these days.
Yes. Epiphone is I hear that a lot. I don't know if it's just from the good enough garage dad opinion where it's just like, why waste your money on a Gibson Epiphone? It's the same thing. It's not the same thing, but that's kind of a good thing now. Epiphone does little things. They break tradition a little bit more with their instruments. So they do kind of better modern stuff than what Gibson does. They take that baseline design and they do a little more with it.
I'm on the Gibson mailing list for reasons that I can't quite recall. But okay. I saw that they put out who is the feller from Trivium?
Matt Heafy. Okay.
Matt Heafy. They put out a signature Matt Heafy Les Paul that I gotta say I'm into it. It's like everything is stark Arctic white from the pickups to the hardware, the neck, everything just pure blazing white. And the three humbucker configuration too, which is, as we all know, the most pimp humbucker configuration.
Right. One, like two more humbuckers than any metal dude uses, but why not?
I don't even like Trivium, but I'm like, yes, I would absolutely. If I was in the market for another metal guitar, which I'm definitely not, I would consider that one. Just throwing that
out. Yeah, I mean, Heafy's a hell of a player. You got to give it to him. But it's, you know, I mostly see him walk around with the Epiphone these days. Like whenever he's playing live, he's always got his Epiphone signature with him. So I don't know if his Gibson signature is a little bit different. I know that the Epiphone one doesn't have these three humbuckers, just the two typical ones. But I do know that it has this really sweet cutaway that Gibson would never do on like a stock factory model, just because it's breaking tradition and Gibson can't do that. They can't bother to make their instrument better. So,
well, did you see the Gibson's new modern Flying V?
Yeah, it looks like the Star Trek logo, like exactly. Yeah. It's pretty terrible.
It's not good. It's very, very bad. So,
yeah.
Well, R.I.P. Gibson. Anyway, but
yeah, nothing modern about it, man. It's like it looks like it was like modern, as in like, you know, 60s modern. It looks like something out of a freaking drive-through.
Yeah,
like
it's a very mod design, and you know, that was a very cool cutting edge thing in the 1960s. You're right.
Drive in, not drive through.
Yeah.
But
which makes sense, I guess. The Flying V was introduced in the 50s. So in 2018, you finally get a design update that's roughly 10 years into the future.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, if a stoner metal guy can't hold it, then Gibson shouldn't sell it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. If you can't, it's more accurately if you can't picture your dentist holding it.
Right.
Because that's who the real audience is for these things. I feel like maybe I'm wrong here, but sales have fallen for guitar gear over the last several years. I think the market cap was at 1.5 million guitars sold per year, down to roughly 1 million new guitars sold a year. And I think that represents a trend that's a lot of things in motion. Number one, like we were just talking about, people don't really have a ton of fucking disposable cash anymore. Like the value of our dollar has gone down considerably. So people, you know, if they're into this, they're probably buying used, like you and me.
Sure. Yeah.
Guitar gear companies seem to cater to exclusively to two audiences. Number one would be crusty dudes like you and me who like metal, because metal has always been guitar-centric music. I mean, you have one-off things entirely bass-driven or industrial or whatever, but if you want to get down to brass tacks, metal is guitar. Guitar is metal.
Absolutely.
And then you've got, on the other side of the coin, the people with real money, which is your orthodontist and your lawyer, who want these $5,000 Gibson monstrosities. And when they play, they want to sound, they want to buy all the gear necessary. That if you can tell them you play this, you're going to sound like Stevie Ray Vaughan. That's uniformly what they all want. They all just want to play White Man Blues.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. It's like the Eric Clapton tone chase that all these fucking guys are on. And it's really interesting how much fucking money instruments can be, and then how much money they can't be. I mean, you can get there's such a wide margin as far as how much money you can spend on any sort of gear. You can get a guitar for $80. You can get a guitar for $800. It's just there's so much fucking money you could possibly spend. And then there's honestly kind of minimal variance between these items, honestly.
Yeah.
You're probably – if you get a guitar – I mean, I would never spend $80 on a guitar. I would never tell anyone to do that. You're going to get some really, really awful like Chinese student thing. I mean, Epiphones are made in China, but I digress. But I mean, you could get like a $400 guitar or a $300 guitar. And honestly, man, most of those things are like one setup away from being just as good as any $3,000 PRS you could ever get.
Yeah.
You know, it's just – I think guys, they expect something right out of the box and they don't get it. And they just go, oh, well, this guitar sucks, you know. And then whereas a bigger company like Music Man or PRS that spend very, very careful amounts of time in their quality control will make something really excellent to play right out of the box. And that's where the value comes in.
I've owned so many guitars over the years.
And same.
The thing that I love about buying musical equipment is you try something new in the future. If you don't like it or you want to try something else or you find yourself in a tight spot financially, like most everything that you have kind of holds its value decently. And you can find somebody else who's interested in that tone that you were chasing and then you find something else.
Yeah. You know,
I think, you know, the guitars that I have currently, for the first time, I've held on to them for multiple years. my ESP LTD EC450, you know,
those are nice guitars.
Yeah, it's a Les Paul copy. It's got EMG humbuckers. It sounds exactly how I want my metal guitar to sound, you know?
And yeah.
It's a very affordable guitar. I picked mine up on Craigslist with a case for like $250.
Yeah, they're not. And was it made in Korea? I think that's where the LTD plant is mostly.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. No, those are LTDs are great guitars. I mean, I know you still see them on stage from a lot of bigger name artists. Like they're kind of the off brand of ESP. Like and this is a thing is that every major guitar manufacturer, they have like their real deal home country custom shop guitar. And then they have their import guitar. And the import is mostly what we see out in the streets and out in shops and things like that. Like most Ibanezes are made these days in Indonesia. They used to all be made in Japan. But now only their very specific high quality like handmade guitars are made in Japan. And they sell them for a premium. Because I guess the way it works is that if you have a luthier with more food in his belly – then you're going to have a better guitar. and I don't, it's really just like a matter of how these guitars are mass produced and they have to be pumped out. And people who are in CQ in these huge factories, they have deadlines and they have quotas they have to meet. So they're pumping out thousands of guitars a day, whereas you have to spend a lot more money to get a guitar that's had a lot more time taken on it by someone with a bit more of an expert hand and eye, I suppose.
I guess aside from the fetishization of an object, of being a nice, well-produced piece of wood,
mm-hmm.
What is the real value in having that? Because if you're anything like me, I'm not like a master guitar player. As a matter of fact, I don't think there are too many master guitar players out there. I don't think that if you put that beautifully, you know, created piece of equipment in my hands that I'm going to plug it into my setup and get any kind of different sound out of it. I think it's going to be pretty similar.
Yeah. The notes are what they are. You know, if you hit one fret and hit that string, it's maybe the sustain will be a little bit better. Maybe you'll get a bit of a deeper sound out of it. But if you're plugging into the same pedal board using the same amp, chances are it's not going to really, and you got the same player, of course, because tone is in the hands, bro. You're going to get the same sound essentially.
That, once you, slap an HM2 into it and then put Hell it yeah. into a half stack, you're not going to notice shit, especially when there's blast beats going on top of everything. It's just going to be the same blur of death metal that you were playing before with a cheaply made instrument.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the discussion I was getting to on Twitter. I just kind of – well, I was sort of lamenting about the fact that like I was considering at some point playing live. Because the reason I quit my last band is because they refused to do that. They wanted to be Varg Vikernes. So I decided that I want to be everything except Varg Vikernes. So I want to play live.
That's
so
probably just, a good strategy for life.
For life, right. So I – well, I mean, I guess to their credit, they're good dudes. Let's say they want to be Dark Throne. So anyway, so I wanted to play live. So I'm looking at what kind of gear I should play live. And I mean, I own this Boss Katana head. It's very loud. It's very capable. And I guess my only hang up with it is the fact that it was like this $350 amp that's not like, oh, a real amp, like a real tube head with a real big fucking heavy cabinet and all this other stuff. And I just kind of lamented online. I was like, man, I would take this thing on stage in a hot second. It sounds great. It's just that people would look at that and go, really? This guy brought his toy to play live? And I guess that's the thing, is there's just a stigma attached to cheaper gear, even though it really doesn't sound that much different than some of the higher end stuff, especially if you're playing metal. Like you said, an HM2 put in anything just destroys everything and compresses it into that one very awesome tone. So who knows, man?
And that's the great thing about the HM2. It's the great equalizer, you know?
Right.
From there, you know, if everybody has the same tone, it's up to you to create the sickest riffs you can.
Right. And for those who don't know, the HM2 is an 80s distortion pedal that was produced by Boss. And it essentially created the Swedish death metal sound.
Dismember. Yeah, right. If you've heard Dismember, you know what an HM2 is.
Now yeah. You're like, left-hand Path by Entombed. That's the sound. What they do is they take it. You take HM2s. They're just bad pedals. Like they're just not good. They don't have a good metal sound. They just don't. So what these guys do is they take the pedal. They crank. They dime. They crank every single knob on that bad boy to the max, and then they just plug it in. And it makes this very specific buzzsaw noise that you hear on all these albums. And they're very expensive these days. You want to buy one used in a good condition, you're going to pay for it.
I have a boutique-made HM2 clone from a guy that does pedals here in town. I'll go and give him a shout. Lone Wolf Audio.
Lone Wolf Audio, yeah. What is it?
Yeah.
What's it called?
Left Hand Wrath.
Left Hand Wrath, yeah.
And I think it's a little bit more it's more customizable, probably a little bit more useful than the original HM2. And plus it comes in a bright orange case, which is fun. but I've got a couple of pedals from the guy because he makes everything by hand. He you know, it's a local business. If you buy one, it will take you months to get one. But I mean, that's part of, like, I guess the fun of it. But these things are fun. They're great. I think pedals, because they require less moving, they require less capital. You can basically be a one-man business. That's kind of where the fun is in creating new sounds for me, anyway.
Pedals are huge. I mean, I only have gone into pedals recently. I was an amp guy for a while. I really thought that I would get the tones I wanted out of amplifiers and just throw a Tube Screamer, like an Ibanez Tube Screamer, in front of it. And you're like, okay, well, this is the only metal tone you can ever get. Tube Screamer plus metal amp, you know? So I was like obsessed with that idea. So I would try like all sorts of stuff. The amp that I own right now, like my metal amp, my big heavy metal amp, is it's by Crank. It's a Rev 1 Plus, and it's this big heavy 6505 tube loaded metal amp by Crank, and it sounds great, but it's a Crank, so nobody wants it. And I don't use it, you know. I don't play like riffy dimebag metal on stage, so I'm trying to sell it. That's all. I'm just trying to get my money back on it. I got it in a trade. I had a 8-string Ibanez. I don't know why. I thought it was funny. Yeah. No, I had this 8-string Ibanez, and I thought I could play some really deep doomy shit with it. And I just really wasn't like a competent enough musician to like play it at all. So I was looking to sell it or trade it. And this one guy offered me 20 things until finally he offered me this crank head. And I was so stoked on it at the time. I had no idea because Metalocalypse used crank amps, and crank amps were really big in the early 2000s. Lots of bands used them. Metallica, yeah. As I Lay Dying. They were like a big deal. So, you know, my little high schooler in me was like, hell fucking yeah, I'll take that shit. Only to find that the reason this guy traded it is because he's probably had it for years in a closet somewhere. And he's just, you know, he finally gave the curse to me. So now I have this fucking crank that no one on Craigslist will take. When they do try to take it, they try to fucking lowball me all the way to hell. And it's just like I'm never going to get what I want for it. So I'm just like, it's in my life and I can't get rid of it. So it's just here it is.
One day I believe you'll pass the curse on to someone else.
Probably at some point. Right now it's at my buddy's house because he's kind of a techie guy, and it had a little problem. To make fucking matters worse, is if I couldn't get rid of it anyway, there's a stupid button on it that you push to like overdrive the clean channel. And every time you push it, it just makes a little pop noise. And honestly, I wanted this thing out of my life so bad, I took it to Guitar Center. And if you've ever tried to take a used piece of equipment to Guitar Center, you know you're not going to get anywhere near what you want for it. Because they have to – I think how it works is they give you – 60% of what they're going to sell it for. So if you kind of keep that in mind, like maybe they'll sell it for 500, they're going to give you like maybe 300, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I took it to Guitar Center. The guy was riffing on it. It sounded great. And then he pushed the fucking button and it made a tiny little poppy noise. And he was like, no, it's broken. I can't take it.
Damn.
And it was, oh my god, so I
you
have
were
to like
so close to making that his problem.
Right. All he had to do was not push it and I would have been in the clear. I'm never gonna get rid of the thing. If anyone's listening and wants a crank rev, I'll give it to you. I'll sell it for a song, man.
Yeah, buy his crank.
Good deal. Yeah, please. But honestly, enough rambling about like my own stupid shit. Let me just go ahead and get to the crux of my point here. So I was having this discussion on Twitter, and basically what I was trying to point out is we have this very strange sort of phenomenon in metal music where we're all these crusty dudes. We're all very DIY, and all of these artists are supposed to be broke. You know, we hear all these stories about how they're living in vans, they're eating next to nothing, and they're just struggling so much out on the road, and they're breaking up due to lack of money. But they say all this, and at the same time, they're playing in front of these big $5,000, sometimes more, live rigs with all the trimmings. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, you got your rack units.
Yeah. Right. If I see a guy with a rack unit, I leave.
Oh, man. I know that guy's in. I'm in for some serious shit with that.
Right. These guys who just – they just go on this tone quest and they just pick up as much expensive gear as
the
possible.
The worst RPG I've ever played.
Yes. and it's funny because you got these amplifiers like Engel and Diesel – that are like specifically and any number of boutique amplifier companies like Varelin, Friedman, even God, Friedman's not boutique and they're so fucking expensive, like $3,000 for the BE50, I think. And you'll see dudes like playing this shit live. And I'm just like, how? Like, no wonder you're starving, man. You spent every possible dime you could ever make as a person who's in the middle class on this shit. You know,
let's break this out a little bit for people that might not be familiar. How much do you reckon a diesel amp costs?
A diesel amp, I think the VH4, I think that's either just about underneath or about $4,000, like $4,000 just for
Jesus Christ.
the head alone. Like that's their flagship amplifier. Yeah.
But you can't just put that into like a ratty cabinet. Like you probably got to get an Emperor cabinet too, you know?
There's a, I just read this article. I wish I had it in front of me. There's this philosopher, who there's like the story about how he was pretty much a poor man and he went to speak with, royalty and she gifted him this like really nice crimson robe or something like a silk robe. And so since he had this silk robe, he began to upgrade the rest of his life to sort of match his silk robe. So he bought himself like a better chair, and then there's the better chair. So he's got to get better things for his room. And so he's wasting all of his money to try to match this like elegant silk robe that he owns, because he's never had anything nice. He was a broke guy. And I feel like that it's – I don't know the last name of it. It's like the whatever his name is effect. You know what I mean?
I feel what you're talking about.
Yeah. Once you get something nice, you got to keep getting nicer stuff around the nice thing to match it.
So we've got these ungodly expensive fetish objects for musicians, and they're like, guts to have it, brah. I mean, you're not going to play a fucking Fender Squire into this nice diesel unit either. You got to have like a nice $2,000-$4,000 guitar to put into it.
That's right.
A couple of my Facebook friends, they share guitars from like guitar porn pages all the time. You know, like all these handmade dealies with the fan frets and 9 strings and like, you know, mother of pearl inlay and just volcanic rock bodies or whatever the fuck it is. They all look amazing, but like I look at that, I'm like, I would play this like shit.
What is it? Mayoness guitars, Ormsby guitars, all these fucking crazy handcrafted guitars for dudes who play metal. I think that's obscene. That it's like, this is what the metal community has going on in it. This weird, like, vying for economic status through gear. Like it's like driving Lexuses, except, you know, playing it in front of a room of people. And honestly, most fans, as I'm sure people are listening can verify, don't give a shit.
So that's folks, if you're listening to the show, you're not a musician, you've never been a musician, you don't give a fuck about gear, please let us know below, because I think that's going to be incredibly enlightening for a whole lot of people.
Especially us, so we don't do a podcast like this again.
We'll get into some other stuff in a minute, but for now, this conversation you were having.
Yeah, so a lot of people weighed in on it. Most people were in agreement with me, you know, and the consensus is like, fuck gear, make music. You know what I mean? Focus on your craft. Make good songs. I mean, you can get stuff used for dirt cheap that can sort of do the same thing. The Boss Katana being one of them. It's a good amp. It sounds good. You can get any number of used PV gear on any Craigslist, and it's all tube heads, you know, big cabinets, all that shit. And people are trying to get rid of it because, you know, like you said, they're either making rent or their wife wants it out of the garage after so many years. So there's all sorts of shit you can play metal with. And honestly, it's like this disgusting squash distorted tone anyway that you're playing in a mix with a band live or in a studio. It just – God, it doesn't matter at all. So like even Chris from Botnet kind of weighed in. Like he retweeted what I said and he kind of – put his personal spin on it and said that, you know, here's his quote. He said, "Took 4 years of trading, selling, saving, etc. I couldn't replace it all if it was stolen now. I sacrificed most things for my gear, including food, coffee, a credit score, etc. Why? Really? No clue. Should have just rolled with a Crate Blue Voodoo."
Hell yeah, which, brother.
A Crate Blue Voodoo is an older It's a tube amplifier, so it's okay, but it's like
it'll cost really you about $300 for a half stack on Craigslist.
Yeah,
you're Crate Blue Voodoo.
You're ready to go. That's all you need. Drop $300 and that's it. And I've also got some other things from people who are saying like, well, and this is of course the people who have the expensive gear. They're telling me it's like, well, you know, I work a square 9-to-5 job. You know, I buy used. And it's like, okay, so a used $4,000 head is $3,500. Good for you. you know, and it's like, well, I save my money. And I'm just like, well, still, like, what immense privilege you must have. Like, to just have $3,000 in your account, being someone who lives on your own, and how much groceries you could buy, how much rent you could pay, how many bills you could pay with $3,000. And then it just put it all on a fucking tube amplifier. Jesus Christ, you know, like I would sob if I lost $3,000 over something like that. Like I would buy it, be happy for a second, put it up on Instagram to show it off, and then just cry myself to sleep and then probably try to sell it immediately.
I've got a guy coming next week to replace the AC ducts in my house because they're all shot to shit, and it's going to cost me $3,000. It is killing me.
Yeah, I would feel the loss. Not to mention, I mean, how much cool shit, as far as gear is concerned, you could buy with $3,000. It's like, instead you're going to drop it all on a head. You could get yourself everything for $3,000. A guitar, a pedal board full of pedals, a cabinet, an amp, all the shit, man. But instead you just drop it on one Friedman BE-50 because it sounds a little bit chimier than the other ones do. I just don't get it.
You could spend $250 on a decent, LTD, and then like $100 on guitar modeling software for your computer and an interface, and just play directly into your computer. Well, you have so much more freedom to try new things too. There's so many options for making music. It's easier than ever now, and we're still fetishizing, gear that's expensive for the sake of being expensive.
And that's the thing, man. If any of you guys are familiar with Rigs of Doom, which is this, it's like an Instagram account that all they do is share pictures from bands and just random people online who hashtag their stuff Rigs of Doom. And they just show off all their big vintage cabinets and their very expensive out of production amplifiers. And it's like piles of shit that must have cost tens of thousands of dollars. And it's all played by like stoner doom bands that probably don't have more than 400 fans any given year. So I don't see why, man.
Yep. What I'm saying here is reconsider what you actually need and go lower. DIY or GFY. That's my take. But getting back into Guitar Center, Guitar Center really doesn't sell, any of these Mayoness or is it Dingwall or all these fucking things that mm-hmm. are, kind of made to order, but they do still have plenty of the $5,000 wall hangers that you can, hang up in your dental office.
You think there's a lot of money in teeth, don't you?
Have you ever had your fucking teeth fixed?
No.
Okay.
Just kidding, yeah.
I was gonna be mad if you were like, no, I've got perfect teeth.
I do have perfect teeth. It's just I've got my teeth fixed a few times. I'm just kidding.
Well, there's a lot of money in dentistry, and I regret deeply not getting into it. Fuck, I'm just thinking about teeth now.
Teeth. Now we all are teeth. Teeth. You're thinking about the rubber glove he puts in your mouth and squeaks on the back of your teeth when he's checking stuff.
Oh my god. Thinking about that peppermint polish they put in your mouth when they were like forcefully grinding it against your mouth.
Anyway, Guitar Center.
Sorry, I'm in a dark place right now.
Well, let's get you back to a darker place.
Okay, so Guitar Center, they're fucked. It's not finished yet. Maybe they'll still be able to keep some stores open, but they're pretty well and fucked. This is a familiar story for people. Do you remember Mitt Romney, that guy?
I shouldn't, but I do, especially because he was my senator for a few years.
best known as being a fucking loser, which is what every losing presidential candidate should be forever branded as for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, Hillary.
I've got no beef with branding Hillary a fucking loser.
Same.
Well, he's a fucking loser, but he's still, alive. And as such, his business is it's his business. He's a friendly Mormon feller, which is nice. But his business, Bain Capital. Everybody remembers reading about Bain back in 2012. That was when The Dark Knight Returns came out, and everybody was doing that voice.
Dark Knight Rises.
Whatever. Anyway, Bain Capital, basically vampires for corporations. It works the same as a real vampire. You have to like invite it in, to your house, and once you do, it'll suck you dry. Toys R Us, you remember them, right?
Toys were us.
Were us, correct. Bain Capital purchased Toys R Us back in, I think it was the early 2000s.
Yeah, like 07 or something, I think.
Yeah, did a leverage buyout of it and basically sucked it dry over a period of about 10 years and then laid off many thousands of workers and closed all their stores when they could no longer keep up the interest payments on the loans and the fat management fees that Toys R Us was having to kick back to Bain management officials. So that left a whole lot of people without a job. I assume kids were mad that they couldn't go to this toy store and look at things that, you know, well, kids don't have any money. They can't buy it anyway. So fuck them.
Yeah. They can just go on Amazon between their PewDiePie watchings.
Yeah. Well, thing about Toys R Us is that this is very much the story of Guitar Center. I mean, yeah. they're both toy stores. They're both right. purchased by Bain Capital, and they're both, well, in the case of Guitar Center, slowly being squeezed to death. Back in Toys R Us, their heyday was really in the 80s. That was when consumer purchasing power was at its highest. Back they had God, I'm trying to remember what their cap was back in the 80s. But their performance slowly downturned in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Sales became flat, profits were shrinking, and they were a public company at the time. So you know, this is kind of like what's happened with buying trends in the United States. As we mentioned before, people don't have as much, you know, disposable income to throw at things like toys, especially when prices stay the same for them. So the company was actually put up for sale. Toys R Us was bought by an investment firm and two private equity firms, one of which was Bain Capital. So they, mm-hmm. The way that this works when you're doing these leverage buyouts, the three companies, they came together, they put up $6.6 billion to pay off the Toys R Us shareholders, essentially taking it from a public company to a private company. Now, in these leverage buyouts, only a small percentage of that actual $6.6 billion comes from the buyers. The rest of it is borrowed. So in the case of Toys R Us, it was 20% was put out by these three big conglomerates. They put up like $1 billion. And then the rest of that money was a bank, many banks, and probably invested it. And then as soon as that happened, that that debt, the $5+ billion, is hung on the neck of Toys R Us. It's not from the buying group. So the investment trio was able to put up a relatively small amount, I mean, ungodly amounts of money for you and me, relatively small amount of money to purchase this giant chain, and then the rest of the money is just listed as, you know, balance. It's Toys R Us is now responsible for paying $5 billion to eventually, you know, keep the doors open. So it's an interesting thing that what happens is, like, in these leverage buyouts, the companies promise that they're going to streamline the business. They're going to, you know, invest in new technologies. They're going to make these sales that were flat suddenly spike up. And generally right. what happens is that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Instead they cut costs wherever they can. They fire a lot of people. They increase the workload for the remaining workers. They, you know, cut any investment that was being done to improve the business in the future. And they're basically trying to keep business going as usual with these same flat sales for as long as possible while still charging. Here's the thing that gets me about this. These investment companies start charging the business management fees, like just huge, huge numbers, unsustainable numbers, basically as a reward for doing such a good job. In the meantime, that balance of that that buyout for the bank is not really going down because the interest fees are so fucking high.
It's like a sabotage, you know?
Yeah,
it's like there's exactly. No way for them to get out of it.
So Toys R Us was paying roughly $500 million in interest alone every fucking year. Can you imagine? I mean, if you've ever gotten yourself in credit card debt, which I have,
yes.
it sucks balls with that 23% APR. It's impossible whole to get out of. And that's the thing. When your interest payments are $500 million a year, you're never going to get out of the hole. And that's by design. The Bain and others were able to suck as much income out of this as possible before eventually just crashing the entire ship, putting 30,000 employees out of a job, saying, yeah. fuck you. They get nothing. In the meantime, right. management gets those giant payouts for doing a shit-ass job.
Yeah, this isn't – yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
You helped us sink the business. Here's a few million dollars. By the way, the single moms working double shifts every week, go fuck yourself.
Right. It's like the plan is for the business to fail. They see the business failing. They see the business needs help, and they take advantage of that. And they make all these big promises. And they know at the end that it's just not going to happen. So it's like pure evil in its worst form. It's just so like disgusting. Every time I look into money and politics and just what happens with these businesses and what happens to hardworking people in America, it's just like, oh, it makes my stomach turn.
The thing about capitalism is I think everybody has a general idea of what it is. And everybody's kind of like, okay, well, that seems reasonable. People should work. They should make money. They should, you know, they should work hard. They should provide for their families. We should all be contributing. And that's what capitalism is for us, the fucking pissants.
Right.
Because you're never gonna make $1 million. The idea of like small business is really fucking pretty out the window for almost everybody. You can't open up a hardware store, you know, you can't just provide a simple service for your community like that because you're going to get put out of business by the big dudes and then you're going to be left with a bankruptcy and terrible credit and you're basically up shit creek with a turd for a paddle.
Yeah.
The thing about this capitalist thing where all of these huge gains are given to such a small amount of people is that it's endless because there's no business that can say, well, our plan is to get to a sustainable level and stay there. There is this impetus. You must continue to grow. You must always provide a profit to your shareholders. Every decision must benefit the shareholders above all else. It's not your employees. It's not your consumer. It's the shareholders.
No, not at all.
And that leads to making so many disastrous decisions that fuck over everybody else. It really is like the idea is endless growth in capitalism, and which it mirrors cancer. Cells dividing at an alarming rate and will lead to the actual body being left dead. In the case of Toys R Us and soon to be Guitar Center.
Guitar Center.
So I don't know exactly what Bain Capital said that they were going to do for Guitar Center at the beginning, but it's in a bad way. It's currently got a debt of over $1 billion, and it's narrowly avoiding defaulting on its interest payments. And you know, I don't see the trend changing anytime soon that guitar-based music is suddenly going to become super, super popular again. Every kid out there is going to have to go buy a brand new Gibson.
Right, and that was that's something that we've kind of talked about before. That the reason that presumably Guitar Center is doing so poorly, and the reason that Gibson is doing so poorly is, and this is the notion more from the companies than anybody else, is that guitar-based music is not as popular, and that the consumer base for purchasing guitars, playing guitars, buying gear, all that stuff, it's sort of aging out. I mean, the only guys who I know who buy guitars now and play guitars are guys my age, because it was cool when we were kids. Kids these days couldn't give less of a shit about guitars, or that, or anyway, that's the consensus from some of these bigger brands, and they're just hoping that someday they could get a true guitar hero that could come out and really bring it all back. I've heard quotes from Paul McCartney about that sort of thing. There was, I think, recently an article, I don't know if it was Washington Post or not, but it was talking about the death of the electric guitar, based on Fender sales and based on Gibson sales. And I think the Gibson was a lot more clear cut. That Gibson's definitely failing. A Guitar Center is definitely failing. I think Fender is not doing so bad. I think Fender is probably a really great model for how you should run a music gear based company, because they do a lot of stuff. They don't just make guitars like Gibson kind of seems to do.
Yeah. They've got a really diverse product offering, you know? Like, yeah, there does seem to be something for everybody there if you're interested in that kind of thing.
Yeah, and there's amplifiers as well as guitars, and both of which are held in high esteem. Like the Fender Reverb is huge. People love that amp. For generations, people have loved that amp. It's got a certain tone, and it's great with pedals, and everybody wants it. And Fender, of course, has been making these very iconic guitars that are played by very big names like Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton and so on and so forth, with the Stratocaster and Telecasters. So they're not doing anywhere near as bad as Gibson is.
I think that also their artists' signature series, they didn't stop with just Stevie Ray Vaughan and Eric Clapton, although they continue to pump those out every year. Of course, they have younger artists that, you know, they'll give a custom guitar to, which, you know, it's cool.
I've also heard working as a signature artist, maybe this is a bit of an aside, but I've heard working as a signature artist for Gibson is like horrible. Bill Kelleher of Mastodon recently left Gibson for ESP, and he outlined that Gibson is just kind of a shit company to work for as a signature artist. There's really no consensus. You can't get any information. You're expected to drop everything and do these kind of like guitar clinics for them and stuff, and there's really not any kind of payout for that sort of thing. And so he just said, fuck it, and moved over to ESP, who's been treating him great, he's been saying. So,
Yeah, I don't want to continue to harp on Gibson, because, I mean, they're going to be dead soon, so fuck
it. Right, stop but taking the dead
yeah, horse. Everything about their leadership that I've heard, too, is Henry Juskovits, their CEO, is just a giant fucking piece of shit. Yeah. Trump supporter, gave a lot of money to that campaign. I've heard that the conditions of working for Gibson, like in their main office, is that it is a very hostile environment, and that he himself is just a giant asshole. So Henry, if you're listening, please come on the show so we can berate you some more and talk about how shitty your fucking company is.
Right, and how broke you're gonna be. Yeah. Fucking loser. Oh, I mean, no, he'll be fine.
Fucking
fine. That's the worst part about
this. No, that's the lesson from all of us, though. Like, you can. And especially with Bain, they're putting all of these these people out of work. They're supposedly failing at their outlined task of saving these companies. They're fine. They fail upwards. They have the system in pocket where the money goes to them. Not to go all Bingo Sandy on you, but like the 1% get richer, and everybody else can, you know, go fuck themselves. It's terribly frustrating, and as people in a malign subculture like heavy metal, I think that we gotta stick to jamming Econo and DIY and not giving any money to these horrible people.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, it's like you said, guitar has been around for 60 years. There's enough electric guitars in the system of the planets that, like,
we don't need to make any more guitars. There are enough guitars for everybody.
There's one for every man, woman, and child, honestly. Hell, you could go to just some of these practice spaces and see that yourself. There's for every guitarist, there's 20 guitars in some of these places. So
I got an idea on how we're going to save rock and roll, because
yes,
it hasn't been the most popular form of music in decades, you know. And it looks like, you know, it's the genre itself, it's always going to be around in some way, shape, or form. But, I mean, so is rockabilly. So we need to make a big change here, and it's going to start with the government. What we're going to do is we're going to offer a guitar buyback program. You have guitars. The government's going to buy them, not for a full value, but, you know, you have some. We're going to hire a civilian conservation corps of luthiers to set up these guitars, put a new set of strings on them, put some EMGs on them, and we're going to radically redistribute them.
Oh, not EMGs. Come on.
All right. Well, some lace pickups. That way you can have some real, real fancy gain.
Fat tones.
Yeah. And we're going to redistribute them to all of the men, women, and children in this great country. We're going to give them these guitars, and we're going to say, go out there, make the music you want to make. The guitar will become the most popular thing in the game again because everybody's got one. You're going to maybe hear new things out of it, you know, that haven't been done before because you've got people that never had the opportunity to have this fucking instrument in their hands, and they're going to go hog wild with it. Radical redistribution of guitars. Let's do it. Let's save rock and roll.
Yeah.
And the economy.
Yeah, man. Rock the socialism here. Let's do it. Let's give it to the back to the people.
Yeah,
As long as it's not like shitty butt rock.
Well, I mean, there's going to be a lot of that, but no. There already is. So
now I don't want it. I don't want anything you said.
You gotta take the good with the bad, you know.
Have you seen Godsmack's new music video? Have you heard new Godsmack music?
I don't want that to happen. I'm not in a place where that's ever in front of me, so I've been blissfully unaware of it.
And it was fucking published on Metal Sucks. That's why I saw it. It's really unfortunate that happens in the metal blogosphere, that someone would put that out there and I could scroll past it. It's terrible. And because of that, we can't do this now because I don't want to risk it. I don't want to risk that happening.
Well, what are our takeaways here other than I guess my idea is not going to work because everybody will become Godsmack?
I mean, that's my takeaway, is that everybody's going to become Godsmack, so it's probably okay if the electric guitar dies. We can die with it. We're all going to die someday, so we can just let it go.
That's fair.
It's fine.
It does bump me out, though, that like a lot of people who, you know, who are really passionate about music, the people working at Guitar Center, like, you know, they're all, you know, probably burnouts and flighty in their own way. But I think if you go out and like try to get a job at Guitar Center, you probably care about music a little bit. A lot of those guys are going to be out of work, and that legitimately sucks, and it's not fair. Like, there should be a place where people who are passionate about music can at least, you know, make a little bit of money indulging in that, even if it's, you know, working for some shitty corporate master.
I agree. And I think, I think a lot of this stuff has been exaggerated a bit, based on the really, really big names like Guitar Center, Gibson, Fender, etc. I think probably one of the biggest problems is the market is oversaturated, and you have a lot of people making guitars, and you have a lot of people with, honestly, instrument retail as a thing. I mean, you got Sweetwater.com, ZZ Sounds, all these other big names that are all Guitar Center is competing with, and honestly, some of them are doing a better job.
Yeah, that's so fair. Totally true, and it's partly on it's partly on the company, and again, this is, you know, the management structure in place that fucked it all up, that, you know, failed to adapt to these changing trends, people being more interested in these independent guitar companies, in better used retail stock online, like Reverb.com. They took over that spot. You know, Guitar For Center sure. could have had that, but they didn't.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, Guitar Center, I still browse their used stuff because it's typically cheaper than Reverb. Reverb, it's you know, the users set up their own prices. You can make offers, but you know, your mileage may vary there. But yeah, I think that we're going to have guitar-based music for a good long time. We're certainly not going to see it die out in our lifetime.
These big old guard companies are definitely doomed.
Yeah, well, the trend is there. So you guys just keep on strumming and keep on putting out the metal music. And, you know, even if there's no money and you can't get the $4,000 diesel that you want.
Yeah, don't buy those, by the way.
Yeah, stop it. They don't even sound fucking good.
Yeah, don't be a fucking bougie-ass bitch. Fucking play something cheap like the rest of us.
Yeah. Like, fuck Friedman. Like, fuck Bogner. It's like we should give people shit for bringing that stuff on stage. We shouldn't just vlog over it. We should
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, there should be a new stigma against that shit. There shouldn't be a stigma against Line 6. Fuck, I mean, Line 6 does their best, you know. It's okay.
Can you imagine a metal musician getting on stage wearing all like Gucci and Fendi and shit? It's the same thing. All status symbols.
Fuck it. And well, that's our takeaway. We're gonna have to start giving people shit for having nice gear on stage.
Yeah, I like it, man. Throw banana peels at them or something. I don't know. If you enjoyed this episode, because we're done here, I got nothing else. I gotta go to a thing.
Sure.
Share it with a friend. Tell somebody. Put it on social media that we're not going to see.
Yeah, this one was a smart one, kind of a glasses pusher for sure. But that's what we provide for you. We get silly. Sometimes we get smart, or smart and silly. So as always, you know, check us out on Patreon. You go by Joe Thrashkill on Patreon, right? That's how we would find you, or would you go by Toilet of Hell?
It's both, because I'm dumb. Okay. If you search Toilet of Hell, you'll find it, though.
Sick. So follow us on Patreon, man. You'll get bonus episodes of this premium content. We have a lot of fun on those, and people a lot of fun listening to them. Follow us on Twitter. You got at Toilet of Hell for the main Twitter page. You have at Joe Thrash and Kill for Joe, and at That's Not Metal for myself, and at 365 Days of Horror. He's not here, but you should follow him and give him a shout out because he rules. Follow us on Facebook, Toilet of Hell, of course. And man, don't quit social media, because we need you in those places. Seriously, it's just me. I'm just the one who's being a bummer. So have fun, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. And as always, if you had something that was brought up on this episode, you wanted to talk about it more, you can always shoot us an email, toiletpal@gmail.com. That's a good place or comment below. That's fine too. All right. I love you, everybody. I got to get going.
All right. Keep it metal, bros.
Listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.